Today is February 17th, 2005, and can you please state your full name for me?
My name is Stuart Stringham Zog.
And your date of birth, Stuart?
I was born on August 19th, 1927, in the old Grand Ronde Hospital.
Okay. So you've been pretty much raised in this area?
Pretty much. We were gone a few times. I went to Corvallis to school for a while and graduated from there, and then I was in the service for a couple of years, and then we spent 11 years up in northern Washington after we were married and working, and then we came back again.
Okay.
And I've been here all the time since.
Okay. Now, had your parents come from this area as well?
My parents. My father was born in northern Utah to a Swiss immigrant and his family, and they moved to Canada, and they came to here from Canada in 1911 and lived out on the Mount Glenn Road. My mother's folks came from way down in southern Utah in 1899, and they moved to Imler. And my mother was born just across the river from Imler in 1905.
Okay. Were you ever told any of the details about your birth?
Yeah, several interesting things. My mother went to a Dr. Gilstrap, who was one of the more prominent doctors in the area. And it was his policy or his procedure to have a baby nurse 8 ounces of milk, and that was all. And to be able to tell that each mother had a pair of scales. And after so much nursing, the baby would be weighed on the scales. And then if the baby hadn't received the 8 ounces yet, well, it was back to nursing until the amount was showed on the scales, the 8 ounces. And then the baby could only nurse every 4 hours. There were no tidbits in between. Or there were times when I'd like to have had a sandwich, I think. But they said I cried quite a bit because they thought I was hungry. And it was also his recommendation that you sleep by an open window. And so during the winter months, they said my hands would come out from under the covers and they would be blue in the morning from the cold. And so that's why I'm so puny today, I guess.
Did you have any siblings?
I eventually had four brothers and one sister.
So you were raised in a large family?
Yeah, six of us all together.
Mm-hmm. What was it like growing up in your home?
It was real interesting. I was the oldest, and so it was my responsibility to help with the chores, the milking the cows, feeding the pigs and chickens and the horses and all that. And two of my younger brothers, right under me, they would take turns. Every week, one of them would help with the chores, and the other one would help Mother in the kitchen. And so they changed off with kitchen help, and they grew up knowing how to prepare food, breakfast, and things like that. And I never did learn how to do that.
How did you get out of the kitchen help?
Well, they said I was more needed. I could milk the cows, and those kids couldn't milk the cows quite. They could feed the chickens and feed the pigs and things, but the milking was a little more difficult, and so that was my job. Mm-hmm. I didn't do that. Terrible job. There's about 20 years difference between me and my youngest brother, so there's more or less the three of us older ones and then the three kind of younger ones. Mm-hmm.
So tell me more about a typical day in your childhood, the chores that were involved.
shores as I remember them, and we had quite a large number of chickens. And of course the eggs and the milk, we separated the cream, milk and cream. So we brought our cream to the creamery and fed the skim milk to the pigs. And the cows and the pigs and the chickens were our prime source of income. This was kind of the thing that really saved us getting through those tough years of the Depression and kept us going. And so we all took our turns. It was not uncommon on a Sunday to come home from church and Mom would say, go out and get a chicken for dinner, and so I'd have to go out and catch a chicken and chop its head off and tear the feathers off of it and bring it in, and Mom would cook it for dinner. And my brothers, of course, would help, but we did get along pretty good as a family and seemed to have accomplished quite a bit anyway.
Did you have any pets?
Yeah, we had, of course, old Bruno the dog. He was a German police dog type. I don't know just how purebred he was, but he was a big old dog, and he was our buddy. And one of my folks, they had quite a bit of business to do in La Grande, and they'd leave me in the house at night after I'd come home from school, and so I'd bring the dog in the house with me, and we'd light the coil oil light and build a fire in the stove, and the good old dog would sit there and be my friend. We'd watch the highway for the car lights that would finally turn and come down the road. It would be our folks. Mm-hmm. And we'd have to go out and do chores. And later on we had a big dog. Can't think of the name of them right now. Great big dogs. Forgotten the name of them. And he was a real good friend of ours. And
was it a Saint Bernard?
No, it was a big. Oh, I can't think of the name of it. It wasn't a Bernard. It was a. Had plenty of years. But he was a large.
Great Dane?
Great Dane.
Okay.
Great Dane, that was it.
I want to back up just a minute. When you were talking about having to go out and get dinner and cut the head off of the chicken, how old do you suppose you were the first time you had to do that?
Oh, I was probably 8 or 9, right in there somewhere. Mm-hmm.
Do you remember it being a difficult task, or was it just part of life and you didn't think about it?
It was just, I had watched Dad do it, all the time. We had a long wire hook, and we'd reach into the pen and hook a chicken by the leg, preferably one that was kind of scarred up a little bit, didn't look like she was very productive, and catch her and pull her out. And I drove 2 nails in the stump so that I could stick her head in it, and she couldn't duck and I'd miss. But that was kind of a novel chore, but one that had to be done. Mm-hmm.
If you wanted to eat, I suppose.
Yeah, yes,
6 kids in the family.
Right.
So did your mother do all of the cooking and things like that, or did she work outside of the home?
My mother never, the only time she worked was she completed a year at Oregon State and then worked in the bank in Embler for a year before she got married. Other than that, she worked full-time in the home and took care of the family. And she was an excellent cook. She prepared all kinds of meals, did all kinds of canning and food preparation and preserving. Drying apricots and peaches and She made some beautiful quilts. She painted. She sent on some paintings. And so she was kind of a full-time mother.
Mm-hmm. And then your dad, I suppose, kept busy with the cattle and
with the farm.
The farm. Did you have any crops?
Yeah, we had well, the farm grew through the years. When we first came to Union, it was, she had bought 46 acres, and then it increased to, we had 200 acres. And he would hire out his farming equipment. He would do custom haying and custom grain cutting and that type thing for little added income. But most of the time he was tied to the farm.
What sort of crop? I'm not sure if you said.
Oh, we raised, of course we raised alfalfa for the cattle, for the feed. And then we raised wheat and barley and oats and we had quite a bit of pasture for the summer, for the cows out in for the summertime.
Were you producing for local consumption, or was it all being shipped out?
We did it mostly for our own animals, and what surplus we had, then we sold at the local mill. And I don't know, they probably shipped a lot of it. I know they made a lot of feed, chopped a lot of grain for feed, and that type of thing.
So at this time, you were living then in Union?
Here in Union, yes.
And that was the family farm?
Yeah.
Okay.
It was the old Dobbins Estate, they called it, out here on Godley Road.
Dobbins Estate?
Dobbins Estate, yeah.
Do you know why they called it that?
The people that owned it were named Dobbins.
Mm-hmm. The people prior to your parents?
The house was built in the late, well, from mid to kind of toward the late 1800s. It was an old, simple house.
Where did you attend school?
I walked to Union. It was a mile and a half to Union. The first 3 years, or first 2 years, I walked up along the highway. We got cut through the field and go up along the highway. And then the third year, they provided a bus route. So from then on, it was run down the road and catch the bus at the highway, a quarter of a mile.
Were you ever involved in any extracurricular activities at school?
Due to my having to milk cows, we eventually milked quite a few, and especially by hand, it took quite a while. So I was unable to play football or basketball. Those were kind of, they were just too late in the night, evenings to do that. So my brothers got to play those games. I played baseball and track. I held the high jumping record for a couple of years at the high school.
That's great.
And then I played in the band.
Mm-hmm.
So I could go after a milk. After the cows were milked, I could go up and watch my brothers play basketball. I played in the band.
What instrument did you play?
I played the trumpet and the French horn.
Did you learn to play before you had started school, or
no,
did that come along?
No, that was part of the school curriculum.
Mm-hmm.
After school was out, we played for a little while. We had a little band, a little dance band, three or four of us. And we had a little fun with that for a while.
Did you have any favorite places that you like to hang out here in Union?
Favorite places? The only places we hung out were those we had to. That was the creamery and the flour mill and school. We used to play on the old railroad tracks and the old railroad engine that pulled the cars in from the main track. But no, other than that, not I don't think it went right offhand, Benny. Special anyway.
So most of your time was just spent working and...
It was a lot of it was just spent working.
Mm-hmm.
Just spent working.
Did you feel at the time like you were missing out on activity?
I don't think I did. I might have complained, but I don't think I really did. There was just those things to do, and we did them, and it seemed like that was the way it went.
So tell me about what happened later on as you kind of left school and...
Graduated from high school, you mean?
Mm-hmm. You graduated from Union?
Yeah. Since I couldn't start school till we came here, when we lived out of Mount Glen, we were too far away from the school, so I was 7 years old when I started school. As I started my senior year, I got a draft notice from the government for World War II that I was to be drafted, but they typed across the bottom of it, this would be deferred until I graduated from high school. And then during that time, the war ended, and so I was never drafted. After school, just as soon as I graduated from school, I got a job driving cream truck for the local creamery. My dad was kind of opposed to that, and he didn't want me to do it, but it only took 2 days a week. One day I'd go up to Pondosa and Medical Springs and pick up cream and heave those 10-gallon milk cans up into the truck. And then the other day I'd go out at Ladd Canyon and kind of out on what they call a sand ridge, out past Hot Lake and in that area, and pick up cream. And as soon as haying season came on, Dad said, "You've got to quit one or the other." He said, "We can't do this." And I had a real good school friend. He was my best friend in school. He didn't have a job, and so he took the job at driving that truck. And on the second or third trip coming down from Pondosa, he lost control and went off the road and hit a tree, and it killed him. And so I had to go back and drive for a little while so I could find another driver. But that was kind of a sad point in my life. It was the first time I'd lost a real good friend, and it made quite an impression on me.
Were there any kind of services to help kids deal with a situation like that at the time?
Not at that time. No. Not that I'm really aware of, and I don't think there were. Well, we just dealt with it.
Mm-hmm. Tell me a little more about the creamery business. Were you involved at all at the creamery itself?
I'd leave real early in the morning and come back in this old ton and a half truck, an old international truck, and I'd be loaded down with 10-gallon and 5-gallon cans of cream, and I'd have to unload them off the truck onto a set of rollers, and they rolled into the creamery, and the butter maker would sample each can. He had a dipping spoon, and he'd dip into each can and sample it and see what it tasted like.
Oh.
And then...
With the same spoon?
Yeah, each time. It had a long handle on it. He'd stir it up a little bit and then sample it. Once in a while, a mouse would come up.
Oh, no.
Out of the can. We'd have to destroy it or throw it away. But as he was doing that, I was unloading, and then I'd go around and wash, put the cans into a steam cleaner, and then come back out and unload for a while, and then go back and wash more cans, and then the rest of the day I would help him make butter, a big butter churn, and I'd help the butter maker. We put it in 1 pound, make 1 pound, well, little quarter pound pieces, and then 1 pound sections of butter.
So the containers that were coming in with the cream, were they all the same size?
They were either 10-gallon or 5-gallon cans, metal cans. They were heavy, quite heavy metal cans.
So when you had gone around to pick these up, where do people keep them while they're waiting for you to come? Did you set them out?
They generally kept them in a cooler or a shed where it was cold. And of course, they knew about what time we would be there, so generally they would set them out a little bit more convenient for us to grab them and throw them up on the truck. A 10-gallon can weighs 80 pounds plus 10, so 10 or more pounds for the can. So you're looking at almost 100 pounds. Can. And then we would leave, they'd have an order to leave so much butter. And that was right after the war, and the butter was still rationed, and we had the little ration cards, and I'd have to pick up their ration cards and report, turn those back in to the creamery when I got back.
And I haven't heard of the ration cards before. Can you explain a little more? Who was rationing?
The government was, we had so much rationing, it went along with the gas rationing. You've heard of the ABC cards that we had to stick on our car windows?
I have heard about that.
And we had butter, tires. At least butter and tires, and there were some other products, but it escapes me now. And you'd receive in the mail your monthly allotment or your yearly allotment of little stickers, little coupons. And so when I'd leave a pound of butter, why, they'd have to give me so many coupons for a pound of butter, or so much for a cheese, or whatever product. Sometimes we had a few different varieties of things, but maybe it was mostly butter and cheese. And I'd pick up the coupons and bring them back and turn them into the creamery.
And the creamery then would keep records of whose allotment
was
up?
They had a little round token about the size of your fingernail. There was the stamp and the tokens, and so you had to keep the tokens. I don't know, 2 tokens made a stamp or 5 tokens made a stamp. I can't remember exactly.
Do you know what their system was based on? Was it income or family size?
No, it was based on family size, as I remember. My folks had them too.
So they would keep that much for their portion, and then the rest would be processed and sold?
The cream?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
And then the butter also?
The butter, yeah. The creamery, he'd make big vats of butter. I imagine they were probably at least 100 pounds in each vat. When he put this big, big round churn, he'd stop it at a certain place and then reach in and pull out, just paw out with his hands and kind of a wooden scoop, paw it out to his stomach, and then drop it into these wooden containers.
Mm-hmm.
And then they'd pound them and weigh these containers, and then from that container, then we'd take the little pound cubes and other little cubes of butter and put them in the little boxes and fold the boxes. And of course they shipped it to grocery stores and different things like that. But I had so many that I took with me on my route to deliver to the back to the farmers. <I'll talk>.
Yeah.
Well, that helps when you kind of give me something to say.
We're just going to back up a minute and talk about some of the work that your father was involved in.
In farming?
Mm-hmm.
Dad was a, he was in World War I, and he trained as an airplane mechanic, and he was born in England. And when he came back, he kind of maintained that mechanic ability. He'd help people overhaul airplanes. I've seen airplanes parked under a tree out in our field where they'd be out working on this airplane. But Dad would mechanically take care of the cars and the trucks and the tractors. And in fact, he kind of insisted that I help him, and I'm kind of glad that I did. I could overhaul an engine for a tractor or a car before I could legally drive. And but he was real good mechanical-wise. If there was something he couldn't fix, then it wasn't broke. That was used to be the motto around the house. He would fix burner anything. But we did do all our mechanical work, welding and repairing the farm machinery. He was a good irrigator. He knew how to make water run uphill just about. He knew how to take care of crops and that type of thing.
And did he work in LeGrand?
No, he never did. He would do some work at the sawmill up here when they needed some help some extra time. He worked a little bit at the sawmill, but he never did work for any extended period of time off the farm.
Yeah.
Something like that, maybe. It's so hard to keep track of what to do.
Okay, we're going back again, and we're picking up some information about your father and who he worked for and the situation surrounding, I believe okay. It was right after your birth?
Right after my birth. When I left the hospital, we were living at the time on Hunter Lane, on Hunter Road and Wood Lane, which is 4 or 5 miles outside of the Grand, north of the Grand. It's called the Teeter Place now. And my father had 640 acres there, and I was born in 27, and in 29, he lost that whole 640 acres because of the Depression. And he had just built a new house on the property he built it himself. And so the men dressed in black, when they came out, they took the farm and the house and everything and kicked us out. He moved to Enterprise for a year, and that didn't pan out, so we came back, and that's when we went to work for N.K. West out by Imbler on his farm. He had quite a large farm. I don't remember how many acres, but Dad and one of his brothers operated that for a year. And then we moved to another place a little closer to town on Hunter Road. There's no buildings there anymore. And that's when I remember first remember the deep snow. We had I remember that one winter we had a tunnel dug into the house so we could get into the house through a tunnel. The snow was clear up over the roof. And that's the year that we would load the old Model T coupe onto a bobsleigh and pull it up the hill to Hunter Road. The county had the road plowed out. We'd pull it up there with the horses, and then we'd go to town in the old car and come back. And I don't know the mechanics of the thing, whether Dad brought the horses back down and then walked back up to the road or what, but anyway, when we came back, well, they'd load that Model T onto the bobsleigh and bring it back down to the farm. I was going to throw in there, I can remember shopping at one of the favorite places to go shopping was J.C. Penney's. And I think we mentioned this before, they had those, as soon as you go into J.C. Penney's, in the main door, right above the main doors, there's a balcony. And that's where the cashier sat, in that balcony up there. And there were about, I'm guessing, 8 or 10 trolley lines ran down to different desks on the main floor. They were just little cables with a metal cup in it. So when you bought something down on the main floor, the clerk would take your money, unscrew the cup off of that little trolley, put your money in the cup, screw it on there, and then she'd pull a cord, and that trolley would go scooting up to that balcony, and then the cashier would take the cup out, take the money out, and if you had some change coming back, she'd put the change into the cup, put it back up, and she'd send it back down to you. And then the clerk would unscrew it and give you the change. That used to be fun, watching those trolleys.
I bet it was.
Run from all over the main floor up to that. Mm-hmm. Of course, as a kid, it kind of fascinated me.
You were just talking about how cold the winters were.
Yeah, the winters were awful cold. We have some pictures, and I'm in the process of trying to get some of those. Always bundled up, clothes wrapped up, and Dad would be out riding, getting cows on the horse, and he'd freeze to the horse. The ice would be all around their legs, and we've got pictures of those somewhere. But it was awful cold.
How did that change your daily routine?
Or
as far as getting your chores done? And
you just went at it kind of slow, and you took your time, and you just took all day doing what you needed to do, but since you didn't have anywhere to go and
no
schedules
to
meet.
You didn't have to go to school?
I did. Well, there was no, the closest school was in the Grand, and there was no way to get there.
So this was before you started school?
Yeah, there was no buses, and my folks couldn't afford to drive me to school every day. I did want to mention that in 1934, then when we moved to here, to Union, we were hauling some farm machinery along, bringing some farm machinery over, and that's when they stopped at Hall Lake when the building was burning.
Tell me about that day.
My dad wouldn't let, of course I was not quite 7 years old, so he made me stay in the truck while he went to see what he could do to help. And so I sat there watching those flames leap up into the air, and there was a north breeze, so the smoke was rolling over the new brick part of the building and off to the south. And I don't know what he did, whether he helped get furniture out or whatever, but we were there quite a long time. So all I could do was just sit and watch that place burn. It was quite an exciting fire.
Were there a lot of people there watching?
There were, yeah, as time went on, a lot of cars around, a lot of people came by. The fire truck from the Grand broke down on the way, and they finally got it going again. So there wasn't much they could do, just watch it burn. The part that was burning was made of wood, and then the new part on the south was the brick part. And it had a metal roof. And somehow, I don't know how they did it, but they did keep that new part from burning.
Was the rest of it a total loss then?
It was pretty much a total loss. You know, it was about as large as the brick part there that's there now. It was a large portion of that building that burned. And that was the excitement for the day there.
Do you remember sort of the feeling that was in the air that day? Were people scared? As a 7-year-old, you must have been pretty excited about all of the activity.
I didn't mingle with any of them because Dad made me stay in the truck, but the people would point and talk and then go on, and some more would come. There was quite a bit of activity there for a while. When once they learned about it in town, in La Grande, that it was on fire, then a lot of people came from La Grande to see it. That was in June of 1934.
I thought you had said 34 before. 34. Can you think of any other events like that that really stick out in your mind?
No, I could still remember the old house that we moved into here in Union. It was a rickety old place. Out on the back porch, there was a pitcher pump. That was our running water.
A what?
A pitcher pump.
Pitcher pump?
Pitcher pump, they call it. A hand-operated pump.
Okay.
There was a well just outside the house, and then they had this pitcher pump. That's where we got our water. The restroom facilities were out in the woodshed, out behind the house. And the electricity, we used coil oil lights, lamps.
What is a coil oil lamp?
It's like an oil, well, they call them oil lamps now. They're with a wick in them, and you turn the wick up, and they've got a chimney, glass chimney that runs up. I've got two of those lamps that we had. You had to fill them with oil every day, or maybe not every day, but frequently fill them with oil. And had to trim the wicks, and the chimneys would get smoked up. You'd have to wash and clean the chimneys off. But we had those, that for light. Then we had a kerosene lanterns. They were a metal lantern with a big bale on the top of them to hang them on the different hooks out in the barn, and we used those then for light out in the barn. I've got one of those. Eventually, and the problem was the main power line from the Grand Union ran right by the house, but they wouldn't let us have electricity unless all the neighbors on that road signed up for electricity. There was, I think, five of us families lived along that road, and one of the families would not sign up. They said no, they were afraid of electricity. And they wouldn't sign up, so the power company says, there's no way we can get power to any of you unless you all would read a sign. So it was a few years before we ever got that squared away. And finally it was resolved, and these people didn't get electricity, but the rest of us did. And then I can remember the old refrigerator with the big coils on top. We got one of those, and that took the place of the sawdust cellar that was right next to the house where we kept things cool. And then we got a motor for the cream separator, and gradually got appliances.
Do you remember that first day having electricity?
Yeah, the light bulbs, we had to get wiring in the house, they told us when it was coming so that we could, Dad did his own wiring, and so we had the house all wired and the light bulbs were all ready, and that was quite a day when that power came and they turned it on and we had light bulbs. It was quite an exciting day. We eventually then drilled a well and got electric pump for the well, and then we had running water, and that made that habit. We didn't have to take a bath in the old tub in the kitchen floor. And
how did that work with six kids in the house?
At that particular point, there was just the three of us. Like I said, there's three of us older ones, and then three kind of younger. And the younger ones didn't get involved in that. That was after things were kind of modern before they got very much involved in it. And with my two younger brothers, Gnarly. In the summertime, we'd have to go out to the ditch in front of the house to take a bath. That was where we took our baths. And then in the wintertime, when it was cold, that old number two tub on the floor with a tea kettle of hot water for it.
How long did that take to heat enough water for a bath?
Oh, it would take quite a little while with because that tub held probably 10, 12 gallons of water. And this little 2-gallon tea kettle sitting on the stove, the old wood fire stove, and
of course each person didn't get their own fresh water, did they?
The first one got the fresh water. that was one little battle we had to resolve. I think one week it was my turn first, and the next week it was the other one's first. But we solved that probably pretty well. When we got running water, they had a water heater tank behind the wood stove. We'd come in from chores real cold and back up against that hot water tank and get warm. That was kind of a place to get warm.
Sounds like you had a lot of changes just in the different houses that you lived
yeah,
in.
Yeah, it was. Each place was kind of separate. The houses before we came to Union, I don't remember all that well, but I do remember when we first came there.
Did you have any grandparents in the area or other relatives?
Yes, we had them. My father's parents lived out on Mount Lynn Road. There's a cemetery as you go out on Mount Lynn Road on the right, a little cemetery. And off to the left up against the hill is where my grandparents lived. They built a big red barn and houses. They had 11, they had 13 kids. One of them had died when it was young, so there was 12 kids. And they were there. They also lost out. They lost their farms, but they hung on till 1934. And then they moved. They moved to LeGrand about the same time that we moved to Union. And my mother's folks still lived in Ember. They had one of them had the grocery store at Ember, and one operated the bank. And so they had some income that didn't bother them quite so bad during the Depression. But those that had farms just couldn't make the payment, and they were gone.
Do you recall what the attitude was of the people during the times of the Depression?
I just can't recall that part of it. I was still too young, but I remember there was, in LeGrand, we'd go to LeGrand, there'd be a lot of people, a lot of guys with old hats and old coats, standing or sitting along the sidewalks and along the buildings. And a lot of the men had wooden legs. I can remember that. And that was due to two reasons. LeGrand was the railroad center, had a big roundhouse, and did a lot of railroad work, and people would get hurt and lose a leg there. And then at that time, the hay bearers that the farmers had, you had to push the hay down in the baler with your foot. And you had to get it out before the plunger came by, or you didn't, or you lost your leg. And so there were a lot of people who had lost their legs in baling hay. And I can still remember as a kid quite a number of men around town that ran to hopping along on a wooden leg. Hmm. But as far as remembering what the feelings of the people, I don't. I was just a little bit too young to remember that.
Did you notice any changes at home during tough times?
No, during the tough times, Dad got his rifle out one day and his skis and started down through the field. And I heard the shot, and pretty soon he came back dragging his animal. and they told me it was a coyote. And when we went to Sunday school that Sunday, next Sunday, and I told my Sunday school class, I said, we were eating coyote for dinner today. It was actually a deer. They didn't want to tell me that it was, he poached a deer, but that was one of the things you did. If a deer came by, you got him. And I can remember Dad telling stories later about how Mother used to skimp on meals in order to feed us kids. And I do remember the first Christmas when we came to Union. Each of us kids got a 25-cent truck, a little toy truck. That was our total Christmas for the first year. But Mother was quite a food preserver and knew how to skimp and make things come out. Mm-hmm. Did a lot of canning.
Did she can things that were being produced right on your farm?
Yes, lots of, she would can lots of meat and potatoes and carrots, that stew type of stuff. She canned a lot of that stuff. We butchered our own cow or calf or whatever every year when we needed some meat, we'd do our own butchering. A pig. We'd take the pig down to Hot Lake. They had a place down there where the temperature of the water was just right. And you could slide the pig down a little chute and scald him. You needed to scald him to get the hair off. And the temperature had to be just right. And so that was just the right place.
And how did you get him back out?
Yeah, he had a rope on his leg. And pull him back out and bring him home and hang him up in the barn and butcher him. Dad did a lot of hunting. We ate a lot of game, deer and elk, and Mother would can a lot of that meat. And after it was canned, bottled, and boy, it tasted pretty good. Mm-hmm. Another product we raised on the farm while we were here in Union was turkeys. Had turkeys all over the place. When we'd sell the turkeys, they'd have to sell them to the store. They had to have their heads on and hung from their feet in the store windows with their heads on. So it was us kids would be ready when Dad would grab a turkey. He'd run a paring knife down its throat and cut inside its throat. In his mouth, he would cut the throat. He'd let it bleed. And you'd have 3 minutes to get the feathers off a turkey. Otherwise, they lock up, and then the only way you can get them off is skin them. But the first 3 minutes, you can pull the feathers out.
Really?
And so my two brothers and I, that was our job. We had 3 minutes to get the feathers off of the turkeys. Boy, talk about feathers flying. And then we'd clean them up, and the folks would take the turkeys to market.
Were you competitive with your brothers?
No, it was just a matter of that 3 minutes went pretty fast. Mm-hmm. If you didn't get those feathers out, they stuck. They stayed right there. Mm-hmm. But I suppose we made a lot of fun of it, but I can still remember the feathers flying.
You mentioned, too, before when we were talking about the hogs and taking them to Hot Lake, mm-hmm. Did other people take their...
Oh, yes. Yeah, there'd be lots of rigs down there. Every time you go by Hot Lake, you'd see somebody down there scalding a hog. It was quite a prominent place.
Did you spend any other time at Hot Lake, at the hotel or?
No. Dr. Fye, I've been in it a few times. He was a doctor, a medical doctor. He had a real nice operating room and facilities to take care of people. People came from all over the world to take their mineral baths there. You know, there was a railroad station right across the street, and the only time I was there was just visiting or happened to be with somebody. But that was a pretty nice setup. I sure hate to think it deteriorated so bad before they really started to rebuild it. And then in the last few years, it was an old folks home for a care facility for older folks. But my wife's sister, her family, they had some kind of an office or something there. They did some kind of business at Pot Lake, and I don't remember now what it was, but there was a lot of room, and they did quite a few things.
Do you remember what it looked like inside?
I can remember the marble tile, the little 1-inch square white and blue marble tile, all over the floor and up the walls, and the big mirrors, and some of the furnishings, the big oak type desks and furniture. It was in there. It was quite elaborately furnished. It was quite a place. Mm-hmm. They did a lot of business, of course, with that mineral baths, and I can't remember which floor was the hotel rooms. I think it was the second floor with the main rooms for people to stay, to rent out when they came to take the mineral baths. But there was always steam coming off the hot lake and out of the mineral bath area. That carousel, is that what it's called, is still there, with that round type building with a round roof where they took their baths.
Did you ever have an upper
story? No, I never had it. I never did get one.
You've lived right next to it.
Yeah, we go down there and ice skate on the cold day. But never did get to a hot bath. No.
So, explain to me, you were ice skating on Hot Lake?
Well, there's a standing joke that if you went ice skating on Hot Lake, you didn't want to break through or you'd burn your foot. But see, the one lake is cold and the other one is hot. And so the cold lake would freeze over and you could ice skate on the cold lake.
Okay. Was that a favorite pastime then for the kids around here?
Yeah. We did a lot of ice skating. My brother and I would come out of Union just a little ways on the creek, on Cannon Creek. And we had an old GI blanket and we'd put it between us when the wind used to blow, south wind blow up. And we would come down the Catherine Creek miles an hour, and we'd stop at the highway. We'd have to duck under the bridge to get under the highway, and we'd usually crash because we couldn't duck low enough and still keep going to get under the bridge. But we used to have a lot of fun doing that. But ice skating was a real sport then. A lot of people ice skate. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't seem to freeze up like that anymore. We'd build fires, have a little fire and go skating at night and have a lot of fun parties.
We talked about some of the procedures involved in the hogs and turkeys and things like that, but what about the actual farming techniques?
Dad had three big workhorses. Old Topsy was a bay horse. She was the mother of the other two, which were named Diamond and Doll, and they were black. And these three horses, we did all our farm work with them, the plowing in the spring with a sulky plow. It's a one-bottom plow with a couple of wheels, and it took three horses to pull it.
It's called a sulky?
A sulky plow. Okay. And we would plow with those three horses, plow the ground. And when we mowed hay, it only took two horses. So mow and rake hay, it only took two of them to do that. And then when we cut grain with the binder, it took three. The three horses had to pull that. And this would cut the grain and it would put it on a canvas belt, and the belt would run the grain up toward the guy that was driving it and tie it into a bundle and wrap a string around it and tie a knot in it so that you'd have a bundle of grain. And then it would kick it out the back. And after you got through with the field, the grain all bundled up. Then we'd go out with a pitchfork and we'd stack those bundles on end right next to each other and make quite a pile of bundles. And then we had a neighbor that had a thrashing machine, and he pulled it with an old steam engine, and the steam engine had steel tracks on each side and a one great big wheel in the middle and the front to turn it. And he'd bring that steam engine and it'd come a huffing and a puffing down the road, and it was my job then to ride on a wagon, and I would load the bundles on a wagon when someone pitched from either side. There were two men would pitch bundles up on them. I would load them on the wagon. When I'd get a load in, I'd take it in and pitch it off on onto the thrashing machine and pitch these bundles in. You had to pitch them head first into the bundle, into the thrashing machine. And that old steam engine, it would huff and puff and quite a sight. But we farmed for quite a number of years with just those three horses. So one day we bought an old Henry Ford tractor.
That must have been an exciting day.
That was an exciting day. It was an old Fordson. Probably about 1917 or 18, somewhere in there. Tractor, steel wheel tractor. It could pull two plows. That was the beauty of that one.
Is that where you learned to drive?
That's where I learned to drive, my old tractor. Didn't have any brakes and had three gears and steel wheels. And we cut the tongues out of our mower machine and our binder and our rake. And I would pull the machinery and Dad would ride on the back of them to run them, the mower machine and the rake and the binder, and I drove the tractor. That was quite an advancement when that came about.
I bet it was. Did that change your workload a lot?
Yeah, we could do a lot more that way. And then that's
when... So you didn't get to do less work. You still...
Yeah, we...
just produce more.
Well, we could do more things, and then we rented out... We did custom haying and custom binding with our grain, and so we worked for a few farmers around, and that way we did a little bit more and had a little bit more income.
So you thought it would make your life easier, but it just gave you more work.
It did just gave us more work, longer hours,
because
you hated to shut the old thing off. It was all so hard to start that you just didn't want to shut it off.
Why was it so hard to start?
Oh, they were a cranky old thing. They were built by Henry Ford, just like these Model Ts I have out here. You crank them to start them, and Dad was cranking on that old Fordson one day, and it started and ran for a little while, then it quit. And he was still cranking when a traveling salesman came by and wanted to sell him something. The salesman said, "How long have you been cranking that car, or that tractor?" And Dad says, "Well, the radiator's hot." The old salesman cut his hand on the radiator, and sure enough, it was hot. He couldn't believe, and Dad didn't tell him any different, that he had just been cranking on there trying to get it to start. But they were temperamental for some reason. They would burn for anything, diesel or stove oil, or, you know,
really?
Start them on gas and then run them on stove oil.
Was it cheaper to run them
that
way?
It was cheaper that way, mm-hmm. Yeah. But it made them harder to start.
Mm-hmm.
Especially if you killed it. You'd have to drain the stove oil out and then start it on gasoline and then turn it over on the stove oil. But that was getting more modern.
Were you excited about the changes that were happening?
Yeah. it was kind of progress. We eventually upgraded, got a little better tractor. And we got two of them. Boy, that was the big day when we could both, Dad and I could both go out and play in the field. Times were tough in those days. Lots of people didn't have much, and you traded a lot of work. Dad would go cut their hay, and they'd kind of help us with our grain. And farmers traded a lot of work because of if somebody needed a cow for meat, well, we'd trade meat for grain or something like that. And did a lot of trading, but you know, we were poor, but I don't think we really knew it. It's just the way it was. Mm-hmm. And now, as you look back on it, you kind of wonder how you ever got by, really. But it was an experience. I don't regret it. I feel that I've been really blessed, mm-hmm, coming up through this period of time.